Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. Jeff, how are we doing this week, this soggy, rainy Pennsylvania week?
Oh, did we get some rain? I'll be a son of a gun. I missed that. We're doing all right. Doing our best to stay dry and stay happy.
Well, you're out there in State College. Remember, we got blue-white game coming up next week. What are you planning on doing about this weather? I don't want this kind of rain for the blue-white game, Jeff. I hope you are doing something about it.
Yeah, we're getting it out of the way this week, and then we can enjoy the eclipse on Monday, nice sunny skies as we usually have in central Pennsylvania, and then undoubtedly it'll be just a perfect day for Penn State football a week from Saturday. So yeah, this is how we are planning it up here in the Valley of Happiness.
That's how you roll. Get the rain out of the way, and then we'll be all set for blue-white game. All right, let's talk about lead up to the game. And Jeff, James Franklin met with the media this week again. I always say it's been a pretty quiet spring. Quiet is good, is it not?
It sure is. Yep, no news truly is good news at this time of the year if you are with a college football program. And I think that the most interesting thing, and I don't know how interesting it really is just how the coordinators are developing, you know, their schemes with the players and vice versa. And you know, it was interesting. We were talking on our morning show up in State College yesterday with Mike Poorman, who's on the beat with statecollege.com, and it really got me to thinking about something, which is, and this isn't exactly the way he phrased it, but this is my kind of interpretation, is that, you know, Manny Diaz was a dynamic personality and obviously a terrific defensive coordinator. And you're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen here with Tom Allen and what this defense is going to look like. And obviously you didn't just lose Diaz. You lost a lot of NFL talent. You have Abdul Carter making the move to a new position. A lot of moving parts. And I think while there's anticipation, I don't know that I would describe it as excitement and enthusiasm. And I'm talking here more from the fan base. I'm not speaking for the players or anything like that. But, you know, there's, I think, more concern on the defensive side. On the offensive side, it feels like everybody is excited to see what Kotelniki can do. You have a lot more veterans there. Can Drew Aller take another step in his progression? You have a couple of transfers that have you excited about the depth of the offensive line, about the depth at wide receiver now. You have a superstar in the making in Tyler Warren at tight end, and obviously you have two stud running backs. So while I think no news is good news, I do think that the questions more are on the defensive side of the ball, and kind of, as we've talked about, Jim, it's pretty much inevitable that there will be some drop-off there on the defensive side. I think the question is how much of a drop-off, how much of an adjustment is it with what you see on that side of the ball? Whereas on the offensive side, I think most of us are kind of anticipating nothing but good things. And, you know, part of the equation, I think we've talked about this before too, is, okay, does the upgrade that we're presuming, I think accurately, that will happen on the offensive side outweigh whatever drop-off there is on the defensive side? And my guess is yes. I don't think it's going to be a precipitous drop on the defensive side. And I do think you're going to see a lot of good dynamic things on the offensive side of the ball next season.
Well, it's interesting how you put that, that the fan base isn't all that excited with the defense. I'm not sure that's a bad thing, because I still have pretty high expectations for the defense. I told people that Tom Allen is not Manny Diaz. But if Manny Diaz were back this year, he wouldn't be Manny Diaz. Because he had so much talent a year ago, we weren't going to see the same thing. That's a given. I almost feel like I have a trust in James Franklin. Bringing in Tom Allen, I think his head coaching experience, his Big Ten coaching experience, his time as defensive coordinator, I have a good deal of confidence in him. And no, I'm not saying he'll be better than Manny Diaz, but I think having a different voice sometimes brings in some new concepts, new ideas, new thoughts, because it's going to be a new kind of group on defense. Will it be the super defense it was a year ago? No. But I think it's still going to be really good, Jeff.
Yeah, I do too, and I think it's going to be, and again, we'll see how it shakes out, and I'm kind of with you. I think it's okay that the defense is, you know, if you want to put it this way, kind of flying under the radar right now with Penn State. And honestly, Jim, you know, I think the secondary, what is a little bit, I don't know if I ironic or just not the way you would expect it anyway, is the two areas where they lost the most talent last year are the two areas that I feel best about, and that is the secondary and the defensive line. Like, you lost a couple of superstars, both in the secondary and along the defensive front. And those two areas, again, we can debate I think legitimately be concerned about, okay, is it going to be as good as last year? But with the talent that they have coming in, those two areas are going to be fine. Again, whether they're as extraordinary as they were last year, we'll see, but they're going to be fine. Where I think that the real concern is with the linebackers, and more so the depth at linebacker, especially with Carter making that move to defensive end. Now, again, I think they're going to be okay there, but I do think there's a lot of unproven talent, especially when you get to the depth chart there, where, you know, I think it's a legitimate concern going into the upcoming season. But listen, overall, from everything we're hearing, it seems like the players and coaches are pretty pleased with the way things are progressing here, at least to this point in spring drills.
Well, Jeff, for me, in looking at the defense, I kind of look at it this way. A year ago, you had two dynamic star defensive ends. This year, with Abdul Carter moving there, along with Denai Dennis Sutton, again, may not be quite as good, but it's going to be close. Everyone's back at defensive tackle. I think we're fine there. I'll jump around to safety. I think safety, they'll be as good. They'll be better this year. A year ago. At linebacker, as you pointed out, the depth issue, but I think we all have such high expectations for Tony Rojas, which in listening to James Franklin, it feels like the coaching staff feels in a similar way.
Yeah.
Kobe King, I think, made huge strides going into with his play last year. So those are the two givens. And I think what helps the depth at linebacker is it sounds like they're going to run some 4-2-5 base defense, where yes, it'll be a safety, a third safety in place of the third linebacker, which in today's college football is pretty standard. That's not an outlandish defense. And it kind of fixes that linebacker depth because you're going to have a safety filling a role there. So I think I'm feeling pretty comfortable there.
No, I'm with you. I think, and listen, the other part of the equation that of course fans and those of us in the media like to overlook, but coaches and players do not, is the special teams. And I do think that is going to be a really big component of what Penn State is or isn't able to do in the upcoming season with the expanded Big Ten conference and the drive to get to the 12-team playoff now, right? Like the special teams have got to be at the very least solid and ideally spectacular. And I am comfortable and confident that Penn State will be at the very least solid and has a chance to be spectacular in that third, often overlooked element of football.
Well, I'm confident they have so many good athletes on this team, the kickoff returner, the punt returner, the special teams as a group, punt and kick coverage. I think they'll be very good. Our friend Riley Thompson, the punter, I think we expect a lot from him. We're satisfied there. The one scary part is that kicker, and in the press conference, James Franklin talked about it being a competition, and it just reminds me, in a three-way competition, it reminds me of the old adage in the NFL about quarterbacks. If you have two quarterbacks, that means you have no quarterback. And I'm wondering if it's fair to say the same thing about kicker. If I've got three kickers, I really don't have a kicker.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I am curious to see how that plays out. And listen, there are some good position battles here going on in the spring, and we'll carry over into the preseason next year as well. And I do think it is going to be interesting to see what the offense looks like and kind of how it utilizes the talent it has, because I think you're going to see a lot of, I think it's going to be a quick hitting type of offense. And I think you're still not going to see a lot of those big, downfield, like 30-yard plus plays, right? Like it's just not playing to the strength of what you have. But I think you're going to see a fast paced, let's get up to the line, get the defense on its heels, and 5 yards here, 9 yards here, 3 yards here, 8 yards there. And it takes its toll quickly on a defense if you can put those types of drives together.
Definitely is the case, Jeff. All right, that's going to be it for quarter number one. When we come back, I want to kind of segue this conversation into one of our favorite topics, the transfer portal. We're going to do that when we come back. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football in this last week prior to the blue-white game next Saturday. Jeff, when we finished up, I alluded to everybody's favorite topic, right? The transfer portal, second only to, I think, name, image, and likeness. But here's how I wanted to segue to it. And I'm going to go back to James Franklin's press conference and our conversation about the defense. The one position we didn't really get into was talking about the cornerbacks. And that was, I believe, the first question that was asked about to James Franklin. And he was asked about the new cornerbacks that came in through the portal, A.J. Harris, Jalen Kimber, both from the Southeast Conference. Kimber, more a veteran player, starting experience at Florida. A.J. Harris, perhaps the higher upside. And the first question, though, is they lost three NFL cornerbacks this past year. Have they adequately filled those holes?
Yeah, I truly think they have, Jim. And you know, it is interesting. In talking with a few different people, I am wondering, and you know, it is what it is now. I'm wondering if Kalen King isn't regretting a little bit his decision to go to the NFL and not come back and get another year of experience and growth at the collegiate level. Listen, I don't know that Penn State, I'm not going to sit here and tell you they definitively are going to have the absolute equal elevated play at cornerback that they had a year ago. But I do feel very confident that they are fine at that position, that that is not going to be a glaring weakness or anything of the sort in the upcoming season. I think the advantage of the transfer portal, Jim, is you can get guys, right, that now are either proven commodities or have a real understanding and appreciation for what it takes and, you know, where they're at and what it's going to take to get to where they want to be. And so I think Penn State has been really, really good in the way it has utilized the transfer portal. I think, again, we've seen them lose very few players that you're like, oh, man, that's a big loss in terms of the on-field impact. And pretty consistently, they're picking up guys that are, again, good fits in terms of positions of need, certainly the case here at cornerback, but also good fits in terms of the culture. And I do think that's a big deal, and I think maybe is an underappreciated element of, you know, when you're bringing guys in, it's like they can be a great athlete, but if they're a disruptive force in the locker room, like how much of that trade-off is really worth it for your program? It feels like, and in talking to a couple of the people that are more on the beat than I am, it sure feels like across the board, Penn State has picked up guys that very much are about the Penn State culture and kind of the team first mentality, and let's do what it takes to win games.
Well, you kind of beat me to the punch, Jeff, because that's where I was headed, and I think it's a very underrated aspect to what James Franklin has been very good at, as we now get, you know, a trend or a history of how one handles the portal. You're right in both aspects. He's been very good at not losing guys that cause us to go into panic mode as fans. Oh my goodness, they lost so-and-so. And he's been very strategic in filling needs. It's not, he doesn't go to the portal and bring in a dozen guys every year, but he's been very selective, both positionally and culturally. And there was no doubt he identified, you know, cornerback as the position. It was the attrition through NFL, you know, all three declaring for the draft that created the void at cornerback. And that's where I'll call it his emphasis in the portal. And he did a great job with it, bringing in two, I'm going to call them starter level players from the Southeast Conference. If you look at Kimber, this is a guy who has started and played in the Southeast Conference. I'm not saying he's experienced with MAC experience. He's Southeast Conference experience. And AJ Harris has a very high upside. The pedigree, you know, from a year ago coming out of high school and still very young, with several years of eligibility left. I don't think James Franklin gets enough credit for that area.
I completely agree with you. And I think it's, you know, really to me, Jim, it's an outgrowth of his recruiting chops. And, you know, we talk about it all the time that all of that stuff is relationships, right? Like James consistently brings in coaches that are either high profile or have a ton of respect as guys that, you know, at least have potential if, you know, and are rising stars in the industry. He consistently brings in terrific recruiting classes. And yeah, I think he consistently you know, keeps the guys that are integral to the program from 1 year to the next from in-house, that, you know, we talk about it, that the coaches have to re-recruit their own team each year. Well, he's doing a great job of consistently hitting home runs there as well. And then, yeah, I think he's been pretty consistent in bringing in, at the spots they need it, again, the right people, both athletically, that, yes, they can fill in and plug the hole that is there, but also, again, fit culturally. And I agree with you, but I think it – I don't know why he doesn't get enough credit for it, because it is right in line with everything else. Say what you want about him, but the guy is really well connected. And I think at this point, Jim, that you have to say he is upholding his end of the bargain in terms of whatever it is he's telling the kids and their families, and other coaches and their families. You're not consistently bringing in recruiting classes like he does, and getting transfer portal kids in the way he does, and not losing kids the way he does, without people talk, right, in this industry. And kids are going to tell you, hey, you know, Franklin might be promising you this, but he promised me that, and this is what actually happened. Well, that clearly isn't going on. Again, you're not getting these kids to stay to the degree that he is. New kids to come in, transfer kids to come in, and the coaches that he continues to come in, without everybody feeling good about, hey, I know I'm getting the real deal here. You know, and I go back to the, you know, there's still people, I still have friends, Jim, and it's like, yeah, he just has that used car salesman feel to him. And, you know, whether or not he has that feel or not, I am telling you, you can't do what he's doing for the length of time. You might be able to do it for a couple of years. You can't do it for the length of time he's done here and keep bringing in the caliber of people that he is without being authentic and genuine. Those people, again, they talk. They're not coming here, if that's the case. And they're sure as heck not staying here if that's the case, when they, again, have all kinds of other opportunities available to them now. So, yeah, at some point, I think we've got to, you know, collectively acknowledge, hey, James Franklin has built something special here. Whether or not he's winning enough of the big games and all of that, again, that's fair to debate. But, man, what he has established here from a cultural standpoint, to me, is very significant and ought to be a tremendous source of pride for Penn Staters across the board.
And, Jeff, it's easy as fans to look around through the country and say, oh, look at that school, how they're bringing in all that talent through the portal. But I always bring up the best example, I feel, is Ole Miss. They did bring in a lot of talent. But you know what? That created an issue with some of the guys who were already there. And all of a sudden, you have an All-American-type running back, Quintus Judkins. He's gone from Ole Miss, and he's going to be at Ohio State. Now, I'm not happy that he's at Ohio State necessarily, but it's an example of, it's not, the grass isn't always greener on that other side where they're bringing in so many people. So I think on balance, we now have enough of a sample of work or over the years to say, hey, this is what James Franklin is about with the transfer portal. And I'm going to say it works. It's been very good. And towards that end, and I'm probably going to upset all of our fans who, you know, the fire James Franklin crowd, but I want to throw something else out there that came up in the press conference. And I'm not sure if you caught it, Jeff. Again, in answering the question about the transfer portal players, he talked about when he brings new coaches in, he actually has a survey that they fill out to talk about pluses and minuses of this program versus the last program they were at. And he's now doing it with the players. Jeff, that is like a first-rate management, business management model type of thing to do. And I don't know if other coaches will do that kind of thing, but he's actually has a process that he goes through it. And that's the kind of thing that could only help a program.
Absolutely right. And yeah, and it's a very smart thing to do. And again, I think it requires a pretty high level of trust, right? Like, I need you to be honest with us. Like, what is it you're seeing that you like and don't like? And it involves some humility. It's like, oh man, okay, maybe this is something we need to address. And I think to have that level of self-awareness and I think, you know, underlying that is self-confidence that, hey, it's fine if you tell us we, you know, have a deficiency. Let's work on it so that we make it no longer a deficiency. But I think that willingness to kind of consistently look in the mirror is also a big part of the equation of the, you know, of being successful, consistently successful.
That is exactly it, Jeff. And I'm glad you use the expression self-awareness, not just for him personally, but for the program. Like, hey, it's not always going to be our way that's the best way. And you've got players coming in from Georgia, from Florida. That's kind of nice to hear. How are they doing it there and how might they be doing it better? All right, Jeff, that is it for quarter number two. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about the Super League. We'll talk about that when we come back. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We are talking college football. We're talking Penn State football. And Jeff, I mentioned at the end of the last segment, I'm going to be asking you about the potential for the new Super League. But before we get there, I just wanted to mention one more thing about James Franklin. And we were talking about him putting out a survey for his new coaches who come in or now the transfer portal players, talking about his program versus the program that they left, the pluses and minuses. And it's this idea that you could always be improving. And it reminds me of, for those who are out in the business world, specifically even the manufacturing world, have you ever heard the term Kaizen? Constant Yep. improvement. And it's like, okay, no matter how well we do today, how could we make it better tomorrow? And that's what this gives me the sense of from James Franklin, this idea that we could always do things better. So I just thought that was interesting to me when I read that about what some of the things that he's doing. All right, Jeff, let's talk Super League. And we talked a little bit before we got started, and I don't think you read the article. It came from The Athletic. And
I've been screaming it while during the show here, but it's a fascinating concept.
It really is. This group is called College Sports Tomorrow. And I think, Jeff, what's as interesting as anything else is who these people are that are part of this group. There's a representative from the NFL as part of this group.
Yeah,
are presidents of different universities.
I think there's a lot of merit to it. There is a lot of expertise, as you said, within the group of football knowledge and I think athletics knowledge. And I think it would be. Personally, I think it would be absolutely fabulous for college football. I think it would only amp up the excitement and the competitive nature that college football brings. And listen, I think it would allow as we've been talking about, it would allow the schools and the programs that want to be, and you know, however you want to put it, but I'm going to use big time as the term here. And I think there's a lot of schools that are like, yeah, that this isn't what we want. That's not for us. And I think that I don't think one side or the other, it's well, that's the right way to go. Or it's each school's a little different. And, you know, alumni bases and school presidents and athletic directors are going to be comfortable with different ideas of college athletics. But I think this, again, to me, makes a ton of sense. It allows kind of the haves to go all in and be the haves, and the have-nots to, you know, decide to what degree they want to try to go in here on big-time college athletics.
Well, for our listeners, let me give a little background on the idea, which is to have, as you said, a differentiation between big-time and not-so-big-time. And what struck me was they would have the two groups, but this includes all like 120 teams that are considered now what are the Division One, where they would have 80 teams in the big time group with 70 permanent members, which would be based on what we had traditionally as the five power conferences and all those teams. And then 10 more teams who could be relegated moving up and down from that secondary group. Now, I think the first thing, Jeff, that sticks out here is when they talk about having a total of 80 teams and 70 permanent, so much talk has been, oh, you would get the elite teams, the top 30 teams, and do something like this. I always felt that the reason why they wouldn't do that is if you took the top 30 teams and separated them, someone has to be at the bottom of those 30 teams. So someone, you know, literally, if you are a top 25 program, you're going to be on the bottom half of a 30-team group. Yeah. So like the way they play now, hey, I go 4-0 against a bunch of cupcakes. I can go 500 in conference play. I walk away with an 8-4 record and a new improved contract, okay? That would go away if you only had 30 teams. So I'll start with just the number of teams, Jeff. And I think the teams that are kind of at the bottom of those things you talked about, they can make choices. But among the Power Five teams, people will bring up like a Vanderbilt or a Northwestern. Do you think those teams, those schools, would give up the money that comes with this kind of deal?
Right. No. No, I think, and I'm with you. As you were talking, I'm kind of thinking through the interest that there is in the top 25 polls this week. And what if you had a top 25 in the NFLs? Yes, we're in the top 25. Okay, so you're not one of the bottom seven teams. Congratulations on that. But yeah, so. Yeah, and I think you're right. The revenue that's there, and there is some prestige, and obviously if you're consistently losing or having losing records, I guess we can debate or argue about the level of prestige that comes with having big-time athletics. But yeah, I think you know, for a lot of these schools too, and one of the things that I think is going to be interesting that they'll, and we're talking football here, but the number of schools that are going to continue to commit big time to basketball as well. And then again, the part of this that is not getting much attention right now, and that I'm still absolutely fascinated to see what is done and what this looks like moving forward, is the non-revenue or the Olympic sports and what that looks like when it comes to revenue sharing and all of the other factors that come into play here with being, again, big-time college athletics. And I think that those are the sports where you could see more of that 30 to 40 team. Again, I'm overusing the big-time you know, connotation here, but I don't know that a lot of schools are going to want to go all in on all of the different Olympic sports, but I think you're going to have a lot of schools, probably most schools will say, yeah, we want to go all in on 10 sports, and these are the 10 for us. This is the 10 over there, is my guess as to kind of how this is going to play out. But from a football standpoint, 70 seems like about the right number as far as, yep, that's the group that's always going to be big time. And then you have, you know, another 40, 50, 60 schools that can, you know, battle to try to be in the top 10 of that tier that gets to move in and play with the permanent big time folks.
And another aspect of this, Jeff, is you mentioned, you know, there's the 70 teams that, where there would be 7-10 team divisions and an eighth division. I'm not sure if that's going to be that eighth division is all of the potential schools that move up and down, or if they're going to be dispersed among the different divisions. But there would be a total of 8 divisions of 10 teams. And then I want to know what you think of the playoff idea would be 16 teams, the 8 division winners, and then 8 wild cards, which would be determined not by a voting group, but by tiebreakers. So by records and tiebreakers, like what they do in the NFL. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like the idea, and I think we're just at a point where they've got to truly get a handle on, okay, this is what the future is going to look like. This is how to make it as marketable for consumers. And I also do think there is an element here, Jim, and I don't know how many people are willing to talk about it. I'm not saying it's the driving element, but I do think, and I think there's been a couple of references to, hey, just make it clear, even though they have an individual involved with the NFL, that the NFL is not spearheading this or, you know, directly involved. I do think, right, part of this is you want to make sure this is it remains a good symbiotic relationship between college football and the NFL. And, you know, part of what college football is doing, and I get that it's a small percentage of players that go to the next level, but you're trying to get the kids that have that ability prepared and ready to compete at the next level. So preparing them in every way, right, makes to me a ton of sense.
And, you know, I think that's a little bit of the scary part in this for a lot of people. When you start to see the NFL's name showing up in a discussion about college football, Jeff, that's going to turn a lot of people off immediately. It's not good optics.
It's not. But why shouldn't it be? Because there's no question that is, I mean, the NFL is the most popular sport by a wide margin in this country. And college football is wildly popular. And part of the success of both is that people do like following. As a Penn State fan, Penn Staters follow the Penn State guys. And, you know, you cringe every time you think about Micah Parsons being part of the Dallas Cowboys, just like you did with Sean Lee. It's like, oh, it breaks your heart to see that happen to a good Penn Stater. But you follow those guys. And it's like, well, yeah, it stinks that my team lost, but it was cool to see, you know, so-and-so do well for this team just because of the connection there. So, I mean, it's already integrated, the college football and the NFL, whether folks like it or not.
That's exactly it. But tell you what, when we come back, Jeff, I'm going to explain why I thought the optics of an NFL rep as part of it was the case. We'll do that when we come back. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're having a conversation about this supposed Super League. A group called College Sports Tomorrow got themselves together and they decided they were going to fix all the ills of college football. And a lot of interesting things came out. I kind of had a little bit of an issue that there was a representative from the NFL who's part of this group. And it's probably a good thing, Jeff, for all the reasons you pointed out. But I think that there's two things. People like college. There are a lot of people who like college football more than NFL football. I'm one of them. And yep. It's like any thought that it's going to look more like the NFL is not necessarily a good thing. And I think the other part to this is the powers that be in college football, which are the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten. It's okay. Well, this isn't invented here. You know, it wasn't our idea. It's somebody else's idea. And I think there will be an issue there. And what they're putting out as money is always the driving force in these conversations. All right. And right now, the Big Ten and Southeast Conferences, they're making a boatload of money, Jeff. And if there's any way in the world that they would make less money this way than they currently do, they don't want it. Right? That's for this group or any other group to try to make these kind of sweeping changes, you got to show them how you're going to make more money this way than the way you're doing right now. Right, Jeff?
I think for sure. I think that is, and by the way, people will, you know, well, it's too bad that money drives all of this. Well, I mean, it's not money. It's money that is going back into these programs and the athletes, and now more than ever before. And again, we'll see ultimately what gets decided here with the revenue sharing and the collective bargaining that I think is now inevitable for college football. But you know, yes, it is money driving it, but again, it is money that is going back into the facilities. It's going to the kids that are playing the game and, you know, allowing us to see the high-end product that we're accustomed to seeing. And also, you know, at least at the moment, allows for those other sports that we were talking about, the non-revenue and Olympic sports, to exist as big-time college sports. And again, I'm hoping that at least some element of that remains moving forward.
Well, I've never understood, Jeff, with all of the increased revenues that they're getting from television, from playoffs, how they have avoided until now paying the players, because I think there's enough money in that pot because it's an increased amount of money. Now, the thing about this group is they're an independent group. It wasn't like the NCAA put this together or the conferences put this together. It's an independent group. Now, they have some college presidents in there, and I wish I could remember in the article. One of the presidents quoted was from Syracuse, and I can't recall where the other one was from, but it wasn't like an Alabama or a Clemson or Ohio State or Penn State. It was a school, and I'll use Syracuse as the example, they want to make sure they're included, okay? So any solution, if you're the Syracuse president, you want to make sure you're part of the conversation and you're in it. If you're the Southeast Conference and you're the Big Ten, you really don't care if Syracuse is involved or not. You're taking care of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. So my question is, anyone could come up with these ideas. They're actually pretty straightforward. Jeff, I'm sure you and I have talked about these things, and I haven't seen The Athletic write an article saying, well, the Jim and Jeff idea would work out great. Well, they're not going to listen to you and I, and I'm not sure they're going to listen to this College Sports Tomorrow. And not only am I saying that, the reality is they aren't listening to them, because this group looked to have meetings with the Big Ten, with the Southeast Conference, and both of them said, no thanks, we're good. So I'm not sure this isn't just an exercise in putting out ideas that ultimately the Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, and perhaps more importantly, Fox and ESPN have to say, hey, this could work. There's more money in it this way than the way we're currently doing it, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, regardless of whether there's meetings or discussions, I mean, the idea now is out there. Obviously, these folks can read through it and, you know, decide whether or not they want to use it as is, discard it altogether, pick and choose. But again, to me, there's a lot of value to what they're proposing here in terms of really allowing college football to thrive and to maybe capitalize to its highest degree on the product that it has. And I think that is a legitimate concern moving forward, is how do you remain a major player on the stage right now of athletics, and it is, and not just entertainment, and there are more entities and more competition right now for the viewing dollars, for the attendance dollars, than we've had in this country. And I do think you know, college football is in a very good place, and I was, you know, reading through some of the comments to the Athletic article, and it's like, I don't understand why these people think college football needs saving. College football is not going anywhere. Well, I mean, it's not going away, I agree, but whether or not it remains as popular as it is, I think is debatable. I think there's a lot of people saying, no, there's, with the money that's involved now, and like, you're completely changing the idea of college athletics, there's going to be people walking away. I don't know that definitively, but I don't think it's a certainty. I don't think you can sit there if you're involved with college football and say, well, no, we just know, guaranteed, no matter what we do, everybody's going to keep following us, and we're going to be able to keep making these multi-million deals, multi-million dollar deals with you know, streaming companies and networks, and we're guaranteed that the stadiums will remain full. You're not. None of that is guaranteed. We definitely, as a country, have a love affair with football. I'm not saying I'm predicting any precipitous drop-off, but I think you're crazy if you're involved in the upper echelons of any sports entity, NFL included right now, if you're not trying to you know, constantly, I had to go back to the conversation we had with James Franklin about James Franklin earlier. It's like, you better be constantly reevaluating, looking at what you're doing, what will work in the future, and trying to make the adjustments and you know, changes that you think you need to make to stay ahead of the game. And I think that's what they're trying to do here. With college football is, hey, let's position this so that, you know, fans are going to be excited through all of these changes, and they are dramatic changes, but we want to make sure we have a product that people will say, yeah, it's completely different, but man, I want to see it, right? Like, that's the driving force here. And I think this, to me, Jim, I don't see the downside here. Maybe you say, well, there are schools that are going to get left behind and it is a downside for them. I would argue the schools that will be left behind, they're getting left behind regardless. It's not going to be because of this plan. It's because the landscape is changing and it is changing no matter what. Like that part is a certainty. How it changes and, you know, what it looks like on the other side, that's what everybody's trying to figure out right now.
Well, Jeff, I think this kind of plan helps those teams, helps the have-nots, because it includes them, which is not a guarantee now. And the other part you brought up about, you know, college football, is it guaranteed to be as popular moving forward? And this may not be in the lifetime of our younger listeners, but I know in my lifetime, your lifetime, there was a time. Remember when Big East basketball was like the biggest sport? And this is when Penn State started the dominoes falling of changing conferences and forming conferences. When Penn State wanted to be part of that Big East for basketball and create a Big East football conference, part of the argument from Big East basketball why they didn't want Penn State is Big East basketball was bigger than football at that time. It was more valuable, okay? Where is that today? Basketball's still popular, okay? The NCAA tournament and basketball, but that Big East of that era when Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova, UConn were the biggest thing in college sports with basketball, not the case anymore. Things do change, and I would venture to guess, Jeff, in the path we're following, remember, some West Coast teams in the Pac-12 already got left behind. It's already happening. If Florida State and Clemson gets out of the ACC, we have some more teams left behind. Well, if you're a Big Ten Penn State fan, you say, so what? But in the national picture, in the big picture, Jeff, that's eroding the popularity of the sport.
Yeah, I and things can change so quickly, Jim, and I think that's the danger if you're not thinking ahead here. Now, again, I think everybody involved in college football recognizes that, and I don't think anybody there is taking anything for granted. I think they realize they have a great product, and it's about trying to figure out in this new world how to continue to make it a very popular sport that people want to tune in. And again, to me, Jim, this Super League idea just has a ton of merit, and I think would do wonders for the continued interest and growth of the sport.
I think so also, Jeff. My only take is I'd feel a lot more confident something would happen if the people running this were from the Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, ESPN, and Fox. Jeff, that's going to have to be it for the show. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.